You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Tough news for Arkansas basketball last night with Carter Knox out for an indefinite period of time with a knee injury, a meniscus surgery that he underwent on Wednesday down in Houston. And, you know, I kind of had my suspicions that this was going to happen. You hear stuff. And whenever a player doesn't make a trip with the team, my first reaction, Anthony, was I wonder if he's getting surgery somewhere. And, you know, sure enough, he is. And, you know, based on what I've heard about this, I don't think this is an Adu Thiroux, Boogie Flan type situation where if you get deep enough into the season, deep enough into the tournament, maybe you get him back for, you know, the round of whatever, or the Sweet 16. I don't think he's going to be back this year. I
would be very surprised.
I mean, you think about a knee surgery in mid to late February. That's hard to come back from.
Yeah, this late in the season, you do.
You know, they're getting great play from Billy Richmond. But he had a great game the other night at Alabama. I think 20-6 were his numbers before he fouled out in the second overtime. But boy, I thought the other night, that was, you know, Calipari, he's got this philosophy about roster building, about keeping it small. Three on the bench, five on the floor. You know, last year I think it was two on the bench, five on the floor. They've expanded it a little bit this year. You could even say Isaiah Seely is, you know, a rotational player, although it took him a while to get there. But
yeah,
that game against Alabama the other night, that was like the worst case scenario. You got two players out. You got a long game.
Trouble.
You get you get an officiating crew that wants to, you know, call whistles every time down the floor, and that's the risk you run of putting together this type of roster where you don't have a whole lot of depth to begin with. Mm-hmm. They played that game the other night, and you wonder how it may have gone different had they had more than two or three rotation players available.
Yeah, for sure, and you know it's just. I guess tough, you know, obviously it stinks for Carter. I'm sure, you know, he came into this season after, you know, testing the NBA draft, getting, you know, a pretty decent grade there, and, you know, came back and, you know, had high expectations for himself and, you know, high expectations externally. And, you know, when you have your season end and, you know, an injury, you know, that stinks, you know, so that happened to me my freshman year of soccer. I pulled one of my muscles in my right leg pretty bad, so I missed the conference tournament. Not that I was going to make any difference anyway, but it still stunk. But but no, it does stink, you know, for him. And you know, Arkansas is, you know, not a deep team, you know, by design, and you know, so you know, it just kind of gets, you know, that much thinner. And, you know, we saw that a little bit last year with, you know, when Boogie Fland and Adu Thiroux went down and, you know, they started to play better and, you know, they played really well in the two games that they didn't have Carter Knox or DJ Wagner with a shortened rotation there. So maybe you see the same sort of, I guess, outcome. But, it does, you know, it stinks. I don't think anybody ever wants to see anybody, you know, get injured or anything like that. So, yeah.
You said by design. Why is it by design?
Well, I think the way that they've, you know, and John Calipari's talked about this, you know, obviously, you know, you've got a limited budget and you want to focus that on, you know, your primary rotation and, you know your rotation and, you know, use the rest of those roster spots on guys who, you know, can, you know, be productive, I guess, practice players for the most part. And then, you know, that is that. And, you know, that's always been, you know, a concern with this kind of roster, I guess, build. And, you know, he's addressed that in the past. And, yeah, you know, he knows who he wants to have in there. And sometimes things happen and, you know, the way he's explained it, you know, in the past is, you know, if you have eight guys in your rotation and you have two get hurt, then you're going to have six really happy guys is the way he's said it. And, you know, and he's had success with it in the past, right? I mean, his UMass teams were pretty short, you know, had short benches, you know, he had some at Kentucky, had some at Memphis, and, you know, he's had some, you know, had some success with it at Arkansas so far. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. But I mean, the wing depth in particular without Carter Knox, I mean, you're going to, and you already were, you know, relying heavily on Billy Richmond, but you're really going to need to see, you know, Isaiah Seely, I think, really start to step up and, you know, give them good minutes like he did against Mississippi State and LSU. So, yeah, I think that's kind of the answer.
I wonder if this makes him rethink things next year. And I know
maybe.
And I know the budget, like you said, has a factor in it, but you've got 15 scholarships that you can give these players now. And I don't know if the bench players, if they're getting scholarships or not. They might be. I don't know how that works. I feel like you got to have more on your bench to be able to be. Like you can't, to me, you can't run the risk of having two players down, which that's not an all too uncommon thing to happen.
Yeah.
To have two players out for a game for whatever reason. You can't run the risk of having two players down and then getting into a game the other night. Or like the game the other night, and having foul trouble, and then all of a sudden you're in the most pivotal part of the game where you got two guys on the floor.
Two guys who have played a combined 10 minutes.
They don't need
to
be on the floor at that part of the game. You know, I mean,
John Calipari said afterward it wasn't fair to those guys.
You know, and like Alabama, that was the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
But who's to say that doesn't happen in the second round of the NCAA tournament?
Mm-hmm.
What if you get Doug Shouse as your official in the second round of the NCAA tournament, and somebody hits a buzzer beater and you're going to overtime? You could be in the exact same situation in the most pivotal game of the season. Mm-hmm. It may never happen. It seems like the odds are probably great that it won't happen in terms of that happening in the NCAA tournament, but it might.
Yeah.
You know, and who's to say you're going to stay injury-free before then? They've been... Isaiah Seely wasn't able to play the other day. DJ Wagner's been dealing with some injuries. It seems like you're really – like, I understand the strategy, but this isn't NBA 2K where nobody gets hurt. You know what I mean?
I've had to deal with some injuries on 2K.
I'm sure you have. But, you know, it's like this is one of those things where it's like you're really – you're kind of – testing it.
Yeah.
You know, you're pushing the boundaries by building a roster that's this thin.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you've seen that, you know, other places as well. Texas Tech, I think, is probably the primest example right now. Is that a word, primest?
Yeah, we'll make it one.
Yeah. But, I mean, JT Toppin is out for the season with the torn ACL, and, you know, he, you know, was probably, you know, trending to be a first-team All-American or an All-American in some
and
respect.
And he may still be one.
Yeah. And, you know, that stinks. And, you know, they were regularly running one of the shortest benches in the country. And now you're really, if you're Texas Tech, you're really going to need Luke Bamgoy to, you know, step in and give you big time minutes. And, you know, and he's another guy who's dealt with some injury problems this year, too, for them. So, or, you know, another example is BYU. Richie Saunders now out for the season with the torn ACL. And BYU, another team that, you know, plays a short rotation, doesn't play a ton of guys. So there are, you know, inherent risks to roster building in that way, I guess. And, you know, sometimes it bites you, which, you know, you've seen it now with those teams, with Arkansas a little bit now, with Carter Knox now being out for an indefinite period. And, you know, without Isaiah Seely against Alabama, and, you know, we'll get the SEC availability report later on today and see if he'll be, you know, available or questionable for the game tomorrow.
Yeah.
Tomorrow against Missouri. So it's there's a lot of risks, I guess,
risk you run too by signing too many. And this is Calipari's argument is that you sign too many.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw this with Musselman.
You can only play so many. Yeah.
We saw this with Musselman whenever he would sign 12, 13 players per class who all thought that they would be a guy.
Mm.
Is that you get some locker room unhappiness. I mean, you get some discontent. And I tell you, there's the old saying goes that, you know, how you feel about each other in the locker room, that goes a long way toward how you're going to play for each other and with each other on the court. So I understand there's a balance here. It's just I feel like You're really testing it when you only have 8 or 9 position players. And again, you know, I think they thought they had 9 with Isaiah Seely, and he wasn't ready defensively at the start of the year. And I don't know that he's still defensively at the point that they want him to be. I'm sure everybody.
He's made some strides for sure.
He definitely is better than he was at the beginning of the season. But where I was going with that is, like, okay, you go into the season thinking you have 9.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if one or two of them aren't quite what you think that they're going to be? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I feel like last year, and maybe it did, because I guess they were one deeper this year on the bench than they were a year ago. I felt like, though, like last year should have made them maybe rethink how they, you know, construct these rosters. Maybe this year makes them rethink as they go into the 26-27 roster building cycle.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe that's a question. And he was asked that question last year as well, and he kind of said that he was going to look into it, if I remember correctly. And, you know, like you said, they added another guy who, you know, was a contributing level kind of player. And yeah, now they're kind of, and I don't want to say they're in the same position as they were last year. I think they're in a much better position, just kind of, you know, with regard to, you know, obviously how the season has gone, and, you know,
they're in a better position until Doug Shouse calls another one of their games.
Yeah. So there is that, you know, like I said, I think they're in a better position overall, comparatively speaking, to where they were a year ago. And, you know, can that change? Yeah, a lot can change in basketball, as we know. But yeah, I think that's a question that is certainly, you know, one to be looked at as the season progresses, especially if, you know, they lose another guy or, you know, forbid another two mm-hmm. guys. You know, that would be tough. And then it kind of becomes, again, like, it's not fair to, you know, those guys who came in and, you know, weren't really expecting to play big minutes to be kind of thrust into those positions, I guess. Mm-hmm. You know, like he said after the Alabama game, when I asked him about, you know, Jaden Carletta and Elmir Jovic, you know, having to kind of be forced into those moments, those big moments in that game. And, you know, he said it wasn't fair to those guys because, you know, that's not what their role is, I guess, is the best way to put it. So, yeah, and, you know, it does kind of come back to, you know, it stinks for Carter Knox, it stinks for the team, and it'll be interesting to see how they deal with it. You know, assuming Isaiah Seely is good to go, and obviously we don't know that yet. You know, he's going to need to, you know, step into a much larger role than he had played throughout the rest of the season. You know, the Mississippi State and LSU games, you know, aside.
I will see. I feel like the outlook on the team feels a little bit different than it did a week ago.
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, especially like, yeah, I mean, you lose.
And Carter Knox hadn't been giving him a whole lot,
but he's still like a key part of
points,
that. Yeah.
4 or 5 rebounds, something like that.
A key part of the rotation.
Yeah. And he can give you some minutes.
He's very capable of a big game.
Billy Richmond's a boundless ball of energy.
Yeah.
But
I think he could play like,
but
900
how,
minutes.
But how sustainable is that in an SEC tournament where you don't get mm-hmm. days off, or in the NCAA tournament where you only get a game or mm-hmm. a day between games? I think those are the things that, as you just kind of start to project out a little bit, those are the things that might
worry you a little bit about this team. Yeah, maybe you're like almost definitely going to have to experiment with some different lineups. You know, for a little bit in that Alabama game when Billy Richmond had to sit in the first half with two fouls, we saw the 3-guard lineup, you know, with Darius Acuff, Malik Thomas, and DJ Wagner all on the floor together. And, you know, they to their credit, they built a 10-point first half lead, or 14-point first half lead, 10-point halftime lead. And, you know, that's the kind of game where, you know, a 3-guard lineup, I think, works, because that's a very fast-paced game. You know, obviously Alabama plays at the top tempo in the country. Arkansas plays at, I think, the 25th tempo in the country. So it's going to be a very fast-paced game. So that game lends itself more to, you know, having those smaller, quicker guys on the floor. You know, looking ahead to the Saturday game against Missouri, you know, Missouri's got some size. Do you experiment with the 3-big lineup that they played a little bit of? They played, I think it was 2 minutes and 35 seconds with, you know, against Mississippi State with Trevin Brazil, Malik Ewan, and Nick Pringle on the floor. So I think with Carter Knox out, you're probably going to have to see some of those kind of lineup combinations that we haven't really seen a ton of this year. And, you know, that's just kind of by necessity. So, yeah, things definitely change. And, you know, maybe there is a little bit of a different feel. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it kind of all, I guess, comes together.
I'll tell you about Bentonville Glass. They're committed, professional, and versatile. They've been serving their community since 1971. You can buy and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at Bentonville Glass. Com. This game against Missouri on Saturday, this seems like
it's an interesting one.
I don't know if trap is the right word, because Missouri's got the record and they've been playing well enough that I think they should have your attention. Mm-hmm. And I think a trap game sometimes is more a team that you don't
Mississippi
expect.
State,
could, yeah, there you go.
Like Auburn just experienced, you know, going to Mississippi State and losing, and a big that puts Auburn closer to the bubble.
You've got Arkansas that's down at least a player in Carter Knox, maybe two, and Sealy. Maybe there's something. You never know.
Yeah.
I mean, these availability
reports
reveal everything. Yeah, I'm not
well,
trying
not everything,
to,
but
well, I'm not trying to say that like there's something out there that I'm expecting, but
sometimes
the unexpected happens.
Yeah, like,
but the
Keyshawn
point is
Hall being out for Auburn.
So the point is that Arkansas they're down depth wise. Mm-hmm. They had that long game the other night against Alabama, 10 mm-hmm. extra minutes. Then you have to come home on top of that. It just feels
against
like
a very
one
hungry
of those,
team too.
It just feels like one of those games with Missouri coming in here. They're only a game back of Arkansas mm-hmm. right now for, and I think there's a tie for second in the SEC. They're only a game back of that. Mm-hmm. This feels like one of those games where it just like all the pieces and the ingredients are there for, even if Arkansas is favored to win Saturday in Fayetteville, it feels like the ingredients are there for an upset, if you want to call it that, if Missouri comes in here and wins this game.
Yeah, and Missouri is a team that is, you know, kind of still desperate for results. They're right there on the NCAA tournament bubble, and
they got,
you know,
a big win against Vanderbilt.
Tried to throw that away.
I mean, like, this is a team that they get behind big in a lot of games, and then they just play like their hair is on fire, and they just run out of time. I mean, they've got two or three of these games this year where you say, if there were 45 more seconds on the clock, they might win them.
Yeah.
That's how the OU game went a week or so ago. That's how the Missouri game went for them.
Yeah, did you see the screen grab of that last shot? It was, like, down. Mm. And I don't even know how the physics, like, I'm not a science guy. Like, I don't know how the physics even works to where that ball didn't fall.
The Missouri Brainiacs have they've rigged up something in their rim.
maybe so. You know, like Bob Holt and I used to say, I'm a Missouri graduate. Bob was also a Missouri graduate. You know, Missouri, the academic power of the SEC, putting things together like that. But no, yeah, Missouri, you know, that's a huge win for their tournament resume, and you know, they're still right there on the bubble. Like, every bracket projection you look at has them either last four in, going to Dayton, or first four out. So they still need, you know some big, you know, resume wins, and you know, this game Saturday provides a big opportunity for them to do that. You know, the NCAA is going to release its initial top 16 seeds. You know, there's a chance Arkansas is a part of that. Mm-hmm. So if Missouri could come in and, you know, knock a team like that off, that would go a long way for its tournament resume. You know, especially when you look at, you know, Missouri's non-conference schedule, there's just, like, you don't want to say nothing there because there's less than nothing. you know, you lose your only two games of substance, you know, against Kansas and Illinois, and neither of those games are particularly close. And mm-hmm. obviously, you know, Missouri dealt with a lot of injury problems throughout the non-conference slate, just got Jaden Stone kind of to full health coming into SEC play, and you know, some other guys have dealt with some stuff as well. But you know, you lose to a bad Notre Dame team, you lose to LSU, you lose to Ole Miss. You know, that's a team that, but then you have your good wins and your Vanderbilts, and you know, that Florida win has aged brilliantly for mm-hmm. them, and you know, Kentucky win is a win over the field, so a win over the projected field. So yeah, but they still need some more substance to the resume, and this gives them a big opportunity for that.
What's Missouri do well that Arkansas is going to have to be able to guard against on Saturday?
The physicality, I think, is something that Missouri is good at. I mean,
issue for the Razorbacks.
I think it's been inconsistent for the Razorbacks. Like, I mean, really good against Tennessee, you know, not as good against, you know, Duke or whoever you want to look at, Michigan State. You know, so, but it has been, you know, at times, you know, an area in which they have struggled, you know, and, you know, Missouri's got, you know, Sean Phillips inside, Mark Mitchell, who's, you know, probably going to land on one of the all-SEC teams at the end of the season. You know, that's something that they do really well. The backcourt play is interesting because you come into the season expecting Anthony Robinson to kind of be the guy back there, whereas he's kind of, at this stage of the season, taken, I don't want to say a back seat, but kind of a passenger seat, you know, to T.O. Barrett in the backcourt. So, yeah, and then Jaden Stone's obviously been... Oh, I hit the mic. Jaden Stone's been a big part of what they do as well. So I think the biggest thing for Missouri is the physicality inside. So I think that's something that you're going to... If you're Arkansas, you're going to need to contend with. And maybe you have the, like we mentioned earlier, the potential three big lineup to try to compete with that. You know, so I think that's the main thing that jumps out at me with Missouri is the physicality that you get from.
Wouldn't that surprise you, though, if they went with that lineup, the three bigs at the same time? Because then who spells them?
Who spells them?
Yeah, like, you know, like what do you do rotation-wise?
Oh, yeah.
You're going to have to rest them. I mean, and it feels like inevitable out of one of those three, they're going to get in foul trouble.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could go small, put Trevin Brazil at the five, maybe try to put Billy Richmond at the four, you know, try to make rotations work like that.
Yeah.
You know, that. So there's ways in which you could do it, you know, so it's interesting. I mean, that it does kind of come back to, you know, the injury problems, you know, and is Isaiah Seely going to be available to play, you know, at the wing position if you move Billy Richmond to the four, or do you play the three guards with the small ball lineup? You know, it's there's a lot of different potential combinations that we just haven't seen. So, yeah.
With Richmond, the energy, the hustle plays, the offensive rebounds that lead to second chance points, none of that surprises you when you watch him. The steals, the fast break, the points... The last two games, 25 and 20, I think that's been a little bit of a, we'll use the word revelation, because that's not really his game.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't been his game. 25, I think, was a career high for him.
Yeah.
And so is that, how sustainable is that to get that kind of offensive play from Billy Richmond? What's maybe put a different way, what's gone right for him the next two games or the last two games that they've got to continue to do with him to, you know, for him to have that type of point contribution?
Yeah, I think some of it is just his just kind of natural progression as a scorer. You know, we've seen over the previous four games, you know, he's been in double figures in each of those.
The mid-range shot's gotten better.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, he's got more range. I mean, the three-point shot isn't really there. He's shooting 22% from three on 36 attempts, but, you know, his range has absolutely improved. And, you know, now you can't just sag off of him and say, yeah, shoot from mid-range, because, you know he can hit those. So you have to guard him closer so he can, and that opens the possibility of, you know, getting into driving lanes better or driving past guys and you know, stuff like that. And just his you know, overall just numbers are improving. Like his shooting at the rim is up from, I think it was something in the 60s last year, and now he's finishing at 77% at the rim this year. You know, his distribution has gotten better, so whenever, you know, teams close in on him, when he's, you know, in an advantageous spot to score, you know, he's able to, you know, kick it out. We saw that against Alabama. He had a really nice, you know, mid-air adjustment at the rim to find Malik Thomas open in the corner for a three. You know, so I think that's kind of the biggest thing, is that, you know, he's improved on the things that he was already good at, and he's also added more range to his shot. And then I think his ability as a ball handler and as a passer have also improved, even though we already kind of knew that, because last year when Boogie Flam went down, you know, he did play a little bit of backup point guard for them. So, yeah, I think that it's kind of a combination of a few different things. And, you know, he's strong enough as a player, as an athlete, to, you know, get to the rim against just about anybody, I think. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think now you're not only are you going to give him more license to do that, you know, with a shortened rotation, but I think you're also going to be encouraging him to do that.
You could say this about pretty much any player on the team right now with the depth or lack thereof, but Malik Thomas has to be able to play without fouling. Mm-hmm. That's an issue. It was an issue the other night. You think about how that game changed when he got into foul trouble. Like to me, if you want to go back and you want to look at the turning point of that basketball game, and I know Alabama shot like 80 or 85% or something in the second half.
Damn.
But the turning point was that Arkansas was no longer able to stay with them offensively or maybe to keep pace with them offensively the way they had done in the first half or even stay a step ahead of them because they didn't have Thomas on the floor. Mm-hmm. And I mean, he and Acuff were playing so well off of each other. And the whole game changed whenever Thomas went to the bench with the third foul, and then he comes back in, gets the fourth one really quick, and it just felt like the offense. It wasn't like it was bad offensively, but it never quite recovered to the level that it was in the first half after he got that third foul.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that, and you know, it's not just his scoring that he affects the game either. You know, he had the 10 rebounds against Auburn. That all of that kind of, you know, was big. Right, and three of those were offensive rebounds, and you know we've seen how he can affect games, you know, as a distributor as well, mm-hmm. you know, with his assists. You know, he only has I think two games this season in which he hasn't had an assist, so he's been a big part of what they do, not just from a scoring perspective, but from just kind of an overall game perspective as well. So it's when he gets into foul trouble, it's hard
and
for them
the
to,
thing
to
is,
come back from.
There were a couple of those fouls that just were totally unnecessary, mm-hmm. where you're out 25, 30 feet away from the rim and you're reaching. You can't do that, especially not with the way they were calling that game.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, let me count this up. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of the last 8 games, I think, is the way that balances out is, you know, 5 of the last 8 games, he's had 3 or more fouls, mm-hmm. you know, which, you know, you like that he's playing aggressive defense, but you know, like you said, you can't be picking up those fouls, you know, near the timeline.
This is that point in the season. Yeah. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're good.
But this is just a thought, as you said, that this is that point in the season where the freshmen, you start to wonder about them hitting a wall because they've mm-hmm. never played this many games. At least, you know, this. I know they've got AAU and travel circuit and stuff, but like they've never played this many, you know, competitive team games necessarily. Mm-hmm. The high school season, you know, you get to mid to late February, depending on what state you're in, and you know, you're at the end mm-hmm. or you're a week away from the end. And so I wonder how much of that might be, you know, increased and you're playing longer games, increased minutes. Are his legs maybe getting a little bit tired? Causing his feet not to move as much, you know, again, causing the reaching mm. defensively. I don't know, but it's certainly something that's
possible.
I think it's possible.
Yeah. So it.
The freshmen who really thrive at the end of the year are the ones who can kind of overcome that lull, kind of like what Acuff is doing right now. Mm. Like, I mean, there was a point there.
Yeah, he's not bad, is he?
He's okay. There was a point there about 3 or 4 weeks ago where it looked like, okay, he's not bad, but offensively, he wasn't affecting the game, impacting the game quite like he had done maybe, you know, the 3-4 weeks before that. You know, where he, you know, had like a few games, and I know he has assists in there too. Like, I think he had a 19-10 game. Mm. You know, but he had like 16, and then he had 17. And then all of a sudden, here he comes back again, and 24, and 29, and 25, and 31.
And 49.
It's insane. But, you know, like it feels like Thomas has got to find that second wind off maybe. I mean, I know he scored well the other night. I wonder though if he's got to find. Here's what I'm trying to say. I wonder if he needs to find that second wind to help him on defense. Certainly, he's okay on offense, but you know, just to be able to play the better all around game where you can stay out on the floor more.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair assessment because like we just said, five of the last 8 games, you know, 3 or more fouls, and you know, it's hard to, you know, especially when you're getting into, you know, this stage of the season where you're playing, you know, games for seeding purposes for mm-hmm. Arkansas's case, or, you know, to get into the tournament in Missouri's case, you know, when you're playing against a team that's desperate or a team that is, you know, looking to, you know, boost its, you know, potential for, you know, a 3 seed or better, like you're going to get at Florida next weekend. So the stakes of these games are very high, mm-hmm. right? So I guess it just kind of adds to that, and you kind of need, you need your guys who are, you know, at that level to, Yeah, I guess perform to that level on both ends.
I never thought I'd see Todd Day's SEC record broken, 43 against LSU. That was a pretty good LSU team, too. Mm-hmm. They had Shaquille O'Neal, and it was in Baton Rouge when he did that. I certainly never thought, and we still haven't seen it broken, but I never thought that I still don't think we'll see Rodney Clark's record broken, 51. For one reason, it was against Alcorn. It was against Alcorn State, and he hit like 13 three-pointers. I think with Acuff, it's like it feels like anything's on the table. I know we got an extra 10 minutes to score, but he had, 45 in regulation? Is that right? 43?
I don't remember exactly what it was.
It was 40-something.
It was something ridiculous.
It was 40-something in regulation that he had. And so it's like, there's fewer players that are playing. It feels like for them to be successful, they're going to have him have some of these just monster scoring games. Mm-hmm.
Which he's very capable of.
And he's certainly capable of it. And I think at one point in time, 6-7 years ago, if you had asked me, hey, is this sustainable? I would have said, probably not. But then you watch Mason Jones. He went on this great run of 30, 40-something points, it felt like, every night. And even a couple of years ago, I think you were here when J.D. Note was on that.
No, I was not here.
Were you not here?
I was not it.
I
was post J.D. Note. Okay. J.D. Note.
Okay. I get my years mixed up. But anyway, he went on this great run where it felt like, it was high 20s into the 30s. He may have even had a 40-point game against Missouri, so he went on this great stretch. I guess all of that's a long-winded way to say I think that this is sustainable, potentially, for Acuff. Now, you can't rely on it.
I don't think you can rely on 49 points a night.
But, certainly not 49. But it does feel like, number one, they're going to need him to have those high 20, low 30-point outings to probably be competitive. They certainly need Malik Thomas to be playing at a high level, too, next to him. And then you got to get Billy Richmond and or Trevin Brazil scoring at a high level too, because I just feel like that's the recipe for success for this team. Alabama exposed some things again defensively the other day. We had the conversation the other day. Mm-hmm. Are they better defensively, or did LSU and Mississippi State just play poor offensively? Yeah. And I think we got our answer. And I know Alabama's a really great offensive team. They've done that to teams, but there are some teams that are like Alabama still on the schedule that I think could
and some
potentially
teams
have that
are like Alabama light that you might see in the NCAA tournament in the mid major level. Like, you could see like a Belmont or somebody like that come into the tournament, hot if they win the Missouri Valley tournament, or, if other bubble teams continue to drop and they continue to win and lose in the Valley Championship game. That's a team that you could look out for, teams like that, basically. Yeah. So, the defense is you need it to be good against teams of that level, and it's still up from 67 after the Kentucky game. It's up to 41 now. So I mean it has improved just overall, but you still have when you're playing against, and every high level offensive team is going to score a lot of points. It's just the way basketball works.
Well, that's how Arkansas has been.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you just need to find those consistent stops. I mean, you can't have a team shoot, 72% in the second half in the Alabama game.
I think it was 80-something.
It was 80-something for a while.
At one point, it was, and like late in the second half, it was like 84%.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah. At least in a game where 16 of 20 shots.
At least in a game between quality opponents, I've never seen a deal where somebody's shooting 84% with 2 minutes left in the second half.
Yeah. No,
unbelievable.
So it was they were hitting their shots.
I mean, when Kentucky shot like 61% and a half here, it's like, wow.
It was like, wow, they're going in. Everything's going.
That feels like child's play compared to what Alabama was doing.
Yeah, no. So, I guess that's even more credit to Darius Acuff for, keeping the team afloat in a lot of that.
Oh, I mean, that was the Darius Acuff show the other night.
It was incredible.
If he even has a 30-point game,
that game's over.
It's a blowout. Yeah, it's a blowout. It's a 15-point win for Alabama. Mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah. So it was. Yeah, it was. Probably the most entertaining game I've ever covered.
It was
or the division.
It was a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, That or the Division II National Championship game I covered 2 years ago between Nova Southeastern and West Liberty.
Yeah, we'll look it up on YouTube.
It was insane.
I don't know anything about that. Hey, look at the SEC.
You should look it up on YouTube. It was like, I was sitting courtside and I was just like, my head's back and like bouncing back and forth. It was like watching tennis. Everything's just like, whoa.
Real quick. Crazy. This weekend, looking at the SEC standings going into the weekend, you still got nine teams with eight or more wins. So you got nine teams or eight teams that are within three games of Florida at the top. Florida's at the top of the league, 11-2. Everybody else at least two games back. You got Alabama, Arkansas, Tennessee. They're all tied at 9-4. And then you got this cluster of 8-5 teams, Vanderbilt, Missouri, Texas A&M, Kentucky, and Texas. Nobody else in the SEC has a winning record. Games this weekend, Florida goes to Ole Miss. Mississippi State is at South Carolina.
That's the game of the weekend.
No. No, it's not. Tennessee at Vanderbilt. That may actually be the
game
of the weekend.
That's actually
going
to be,
Or Missouri at Arkansas.
Yeah.
Those are a couple of good games. Texas at Georgia. That's another one that's
bubbly.
Bubbly, that's a good way to put it. Alabama goes to LSU. That's not football. And Kentucky goes to Auburn. And Texas A&M goes to Oklahoma. I think everybody in the SEC this weekend is a Chris Beard fan and hoping that Ole Miss can somehow, some way, put together its best game of the year and pick off Florida at home. It's one of those early games, and so you never quite know what you're going to get from either team when it's an 11 a.m. tip-off like that. It'd be noon to the Gators' bodies you know, since they're from the Eastern time zone. But like for Florida not to win the SEC, it's going to have to take somebody stepping up and picking them off when you don't expect it, I feel like.
Yeah, no, for sure. And a two-game lead at this stage of the
season. With five games left.
Yeah, that's tough for anybody to come back from, and especially with how well Florida has played.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's Florida's been just phenomenal of late. And you know, really, really weird loss to Auburn aside, like, I just think Florida has been the team in the SEC, you know, for the majority.
Well, they've hit their stride. They finally started playing to the level of their capability.
Yeah,
that roster that was built.
Yes, yeah. The 3-point shooting is a concern, especially when you get into tournament time. But I mean, you know, Boogie Flan's playing great defense. Mm-hmm. Xavier Lee is really starting to come along, I think. And then obviously that front court
in my eyes, that's the best
front court in the country. You know, the game I think I'm most intrigued by this weekend outside of Arkansas, Missouri, and Tennessee Vanderbilt is probably Kentucky Auburn, because that Auburn team is they're inching closer and closer to the bubble, and you know they're 14-11. The only reason that they are on the bubble to begin with is because they have a really good strength of schedule, but you know a lot of they got blown out by a lot of the good teams that they've played, you know, just to say it, you know, so they need a win, and Kentucky's on a two-game, I guess, slide. Slide feels like an extreme term for a two-game losing streak, but two-game skid, and, you know, both teams kind of need a win, and, you know, I think Auburn especially needs a win, but, you know, Kentucky loses, you know, what does that mean for them, and, you know, Auburn needs to, you know, keep winning to stay off of the bubble. And yeah, that one intrigues me. I'm looking forward to seeing as much of it as I can.
It's a big weekend here in Fayetteville. A lot of stuff going on. You got a big top 25 gymnastics meet at Bud Walton Arena tonight. You've got Razorback baseball starting its home season, an 18-game homestand against Stetson this weekend. Softball's in town. Northwestern's a pretty good program. They're one of the teams that's going to be playing at Bogle Park. And then obviously basketball, the game at 3 o'clock tomorrow. It's going to be on ESPN between Arkansas and Missouri. We'll have you covered all weekend long at wholehogsports.com. Hope to see you back here on our show Monday. Have a great weekend.